Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.
And welcome back to Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. I've missed the last few shows. Apologies for that. I've been off on paternity leave. So I'm now a dad again. A dad for the second time. A little boy, we called him Noah. He's an absolute dream. I've had 2 weeks off. I've not slept a great deal in that time. So if I drift off halfway through the conversation or I muddle my words, I've got a really good excuse this time round. Everything's hunky-dory at home. Everything's been absolutely fine. Thank you to everybody who sent in kind words through social media. Really makes a difference when you get those sort of warm words, particularly on those dark nights. In fact, they're not even dark nights, they're light. It's light all the time. It never really gets dark overnight. But thank you to everybody who's been so nice through the social media as well. Mum and son doing really well, and daughter who's three and now a big sister absolutely having a great time too. Mick@radiocity.co.uk if you want to get involved on the emails today. That's mick@radiocity.co.uk. If you've emailed over the course of the last 2 weeks, I've literally had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of emails. If it's something about the show or comments about the show, do send them through again. They'll go straight to the top of the pile and it means I'll be able to get through them all. That's mick@radiocity.co.uk. If it's a comment on the programme, if it's a suggestion of a guest, if you want to be on the programme yourself, mick@radiocity.co.uk. The email address never changes. Now, I'm very pleased to say we've got a guest in the studio who we've been hanging on to get on for a few weeks just because I was aware that I was going to be off, but I didn't quite know when I was going to be off, and I wanted to make sure we had plenty of time to sit down and have a conversation with him. He's a Paralympian, he's a professional table tennis player, and he's a bit of a superstar as well. Jack Hunter-Spivey joins us in the studio. Jack's great to see you. Thank you for your
good
time.
Good afternoon. Thanks for letting me come.
Yeah, it's been one of them where we said, we'll get you on, and then I was thinking, well, I might have to nip out halfway through a conversation if my wife went into labour, but it's all done now.
Yeah, all dealt with. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Last time we spoke, you were climbing up the world rankings.
Yeah.
You were undefeated. Now, you're not going to come on here now and say you've lost a few games, have you? You had this incredible record about never losing on home soil.
Yeah, in British competitions, I've not lost any matches for 5 years. So I've got 10 British titles and, yeah, I've not lost a single match for 5 years in Great Britain. So it's not a bad record, I suppose.
You're pretty rock and roll in terms of your lifestyle now, because you play abroad, don't you, in terms of where your table tennis takes.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm part of the Great Britain squad. I'm currently ranked 7 in the world. So I play on, like, it's sort of like the pro tour for tennis. Like, so I was in Slovenia, Slovakia last week. I've also signed a contract to play in the Bundesliga in Germany. So once a month I fly to Germany and play for my team, Convestheim. I'm all about the place at the moment. I'm training full time in Sheffield in the Institute of Sport, about 25 hours a week, 30 hours a week. So yeah, it's a full on job, but I wouldn't wish anything better.
No, absolutely. Geographically, just tell us where you're at. So originally from here, but you've got the Sheffield base, but obviously Germany's home from home as well.
Yeah, I'm from Liverpool originally. I was born on just facing the Kop, really. I was born in Anfield. Moved around Liverpool with my family, being in Bootle, being in Aintree, being around. I moved to Widnes when I was 10. And yeah, I found table tennis when I was there. And then 18 years old, I moved to Sheffield to train full time with the Great Britain squad in Sheffield. So I've been there since I was 18. I'm 23 now. So yeah, I'm born and bred in Liverpool, but Sheffield's my home as well. So.
Yeah, well, you know, you've got to work where the work is.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
If that's where the work's going to take you, then absolutely. We mentioned the fact you're a Paralympian and you've got the next Paralympic Games in mind, but obviously you're involved in tournaments all the time. Did you always have the Paralympics sort of like circle as a date within the diary?
Oh yeah, the Paralympics is the pinnacle of your career. The Paralympics every 4 years, for me that was always the dream, to become a Paralympian and become a Paralympic gold medalist. So that is my absolute dream. We also have the World Championships Europeans in between that. I have the World Championships coming up in October of this year, which I'm hoping to medal in. Hoping to be one of the top three players and bring a medal back to Liverpool, so that should be good.
Yeah, and obviously we're talking about your ability. People might see a disability because they'll see that you're in a wheelchair. We're actually going to talk about, you know, mental health. We're going to have that conversation as well in a few moments' time. Just tell us about the wheelchair. Has that been from birth?
Yeah, I was born with cerebral palsy. I was actually born blind and deaf. So when I was first born, I couldn't see anything, couldn't hear anything. The doctor said I'd never walk, talk or do anything. At 9 months old, my hearing came back and my sight came back a few weeks later. And I was in the kitchen and my mum was singing. And apparently I turned round to hear her singing. So my mum attributes her bad singing to my hearing coming back. But ever since then, she's had not shut up. And 18 months old, I still couldn't sit up on my own. I still couldn't crawl around or anything like that. And he diagnosed with cerebral palsy, which is a brain injury from birth. So it means I can still stand a little bit. I can still walk a few steps, but it's my legs that are affected. So yeah, that's basically it, really. Use a wheelchair to get around.
You know, people, again, will use that phrase, you know, disability. But, you know, we've talked there about your ability.
Yeah.
You've obviously thought, well, I'm not incapable of doing everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Or having to sort of sit back and feel sorry for yourself. Mm. You've taken it upon yourself to become this star of the sport.
I suppose, yeah. Like, I know it sounds really cheesy and cliche, but I would never count myself as disabled. Just you walk around, I wheel around, and that's the only difference I see, really. That there's nothing stopping me. Like, through table tennis, I've played able-bodied competitions. Before I left Widnes, I was ranked top 5 in the juniors in the Cheshire rankings for able-bodied. And I can compete very well against able-bodied players. So for me, I'm not really disabled. It doesn't really stop me doing anything. I just push around and some people walk around. Just my shoes don't get worn out as much as yours do. That's what it is.
I think that's one of the things about the Paralympics, particularly 2012. Mm. Although the Beijing Paralympic Games were quite high profile as well. The people, rather than just go... I think it always seemed like it was, oh, now let's these lot have a try. Yeah. Whereas now, Johnny Peacock will just go, I'm just faster than you.
Yeah.
And you'll go, I'm just going to batter you at table
exactly,
tennis.
Yeah,
Hannah Cockcroft will go,
yeah,
I'm much faster than you. Mm. You know, and people are going to see it's about the ability as well as the disability. And almost a celebration of the fact, you know, that people are different. And, you know, and you always have the funky haircut.
Yeah.
For the tournament as well. So you've almost become sort of icons in your own right.
Yeah, like for me, I grew up around the Beijing Paralympics. That was when I first started playing table tennis. And the Beijing Paralympics was great, but for me it was a bit like, oh, look at these disabled guys, they're playing sport, oh, and they're winning medals. Whereas London for me was like, they're breaking world records, they're beating each other, they're world champions. Oh, by the way, they've got disability or they've got one leg or whatever. And now we've got household names that are doing programmes. Like we have Will Bailey, table tennis, who's done Question of Sport. We've got Hannah and Johnny that are doing loads. And I think it's great to get the public eye on Paralympic sport. And we are athletes, we're some of the best athletes in the world, and that doesn't change if you're disabled or able-bodied.
So we've got Jack Hunter-Spivey with us in the studio, Paralympian professional table tennis player as well. I'm sure he's going to tell us about the exciting places he's off to next. It's a slightly more exciting life than being now, I think. obviously, you face challenges with the cerebral palsy.
Yeah.
And obviously, the deafness and the blindness as well at that very young age as well. But you've been sort of quite proud of the fact that actually you've faced challenges from a mental health point of view.
Yeah, definitely.
Something that you're keen to talk about and say, well, there are abilities, there are disabilities, there are things going on. Not all disabilities are visible.
Yeah.
Exactly. As well, at what point in your young life did you think, oh, that there might be an issue here from a mental health point of view?
I think looking back now, retrospectively, I've always felt a little bit different. I always felt like my world is, so to speak, a little bit darker than everyone else. I always felt a little bit more secluded, and when we have a banter, people always hit me a little bit harder than it probably should have done. And it all comes ahead when I was 18 or so, and there was a 2-week period of my training that I don't really remember. I get told that I was going to training. I was wearing the same clothes for 2 weeks. I was crying every session. I was smelling. I literally couldn't get myself out of bed. And the coaches came to me and said, look, there's something wrong. Like, what is the matter? And I couldn't tell them. I couldn't tell them why. I was making excuses, saying my shower was broke, my washing machine was broke, or just this and that. And it boiled down to, I spoke to my psychologist. I'm lucky enough to have a sports psychologist. And he sort of sat me down and tried to talk to himself. And I went back and they sort of said, we need to help you. And I thought to myself, I hate myself. I hate the way I looked. I hated the way who I was. I just couldn't get around to the fact that it was me, if that makes sense. So when I was 18, I got sent to cognitive behavioural therapy. And that was good. I didn't really get on with the therapist so much. It was in Manchester in the Priory, and I'm sure she was a lovely lady, but it wasn't quite the cup of tea for me. Like at the end of the session, she'd be asking me to like sign stuff and take pictures and like just little wheelchair jokes. Like I'd come in into the therapy room and she'd be like, "Oh, you're speedy in that wheelchair, aren't you? You're like a Formula One car." And I was like, "It's not really what I needed at that time." I initially went on to tablets for depression, and because I've been through really, really dark times in my life, and whilst before I was going to the therapy, I tried to take my own life, really. I've kept it quiet all these years, but I remember sitting on my bed with tablets in my hand. I rang my mum and said, Mum, I love you, I can't do it anymore. I was crying and crying, I was shaking on my bed, and luckily my flatmate heard me crying and came out and knocked the tablets out of my hand and rang the ambulance and stuff. And that was probably one of the darkest times of my life. I didn't realise it was happening until it was going on, looking back. And yeah, I've been through a lot in my life. And I think once I recognised that, and it doesn't go away, but since I've been diagnosed, I've also tried to do similar things, before about 6 months, about 2 months before Rio Paralympics, I was feeling really, really down and really suicidal. And I luckily got help from a team psychologist and spoke to people, and I was feeling much better as if I could get my voice heard, sort of thing. I also, probably about a year ago now, probably, maybe a little bit longer, that I also took some more tablets. I was in a really, really dark place. I was on my own. I just split off my ex-girlfriend, and I just felt alone. I had a world full of social media people that back me. I've got friends and family a lot, but I just felt so alone. And luckily, one of my table tennis friends, Martin, he came round, and the ambulance got called and things like this, and I went to hospital. And luckily, I didn't do enough damage to do any permanent damage to myself. But that was sort of, for me, that was sort of like a stepping stone to getting the right help I needed. I was still taking tablets, but not regularly enough, not understanding why I needed them, not understanding what they did. And now I've been going to a one-to-one therapy with Penny, who's my psychologist in Sheffield, and she's been great. It's been so much good, so much better for me as well. I've also met my new girlfriend, Lucy, about 6 months ago, she's changed my life completely. When I met Lucy, I lived on my own in my flat, and I'd call my flat like a lad's pad. So it was messy. It was everything. For me, it was sort of like a reminder of what it used to be, and I was struggling with things. She's changed my life around. She's there when I need her. And it's just that sort of support network I've managed to get around myself now. And I'm regularly on my tablets, going through, I've done the CBT. I'm now doing something called EMDR, which is about going through trauma that I've had in my childhood and through my life, and recognising that and trying to build through it now. And I'm feeling a million times better. And I just want to get my story out there, because a lot of athletes come out and then you get a lot of footballers or people like that, and they say, I used to be a footballer, I've retired now, and I had mental health problems. I'm one of the very, very few, if not the only person at the moment, who's ranked top 10 in the world, top 7 in the world. And I've gone, oh, by the way, I've got mental health problems, and that's okay. You can still be the best person in the world. You can still achieve all your dreams and still have mental health problems. 1 in 4 people have mental health problems, and no one comes out within the Paralympic Olympic teams with mental health problems. And I think it's great to get my story out there. A lot of people I've spoke to, my advisors in my team, aren't so keen about me coming out with it. But for me, if there was someone back home when I was feeling down in the public eye saying, you know what, I do have depression, I do have this, but equally, I am the best player in the world. I'm going to be one, I'm achieving my dreams. And if that someone was there when I was younger, that would have showed me a whole different world. And I think that's all I want to do now, is get my story out. So
I'll tell you, what a story. Thank you for being so honest in terms of what you were saying there, Jack. I think people will be surprised, because, you know, they see the you on TV, see the you being interviewed, and they go, oh, this guy's got, you know, the cool haircut, and he's got, you know, the brand. He's got that sort of Team GB sort of look about him as well, so he must be at peak physical condition, he must be at peak mental condition as well. But actually, you're saying that, Rio, you were weeks.
Yeah, I was about 2 weeks.
The biggest thing that can happen.
Yeah, two months before Rio, I was really down. And the thing I try and get across to people is I'm a professional athlete. It's all I've ever wanted. I was going to the Paralympics, it's all I ever wanted. But all that was irrelevant, the way I was feeling. Mental health does not discriminate, whether you've got £1 million or £1, whether you're a professional athlete, whether you're a bin man or whatever. It does not discriminate. It doesn't matter. At them times when I'm dark, my job doesn't matter, my family doesn't matter, where I live doesn't matter. Nothing matters apart from the way I'm feeling in my head. I mean, it's one of the scariest places I've ever been in my life. And I was born in Anfield, don't get me wrong, but like, it's one of the scariest places I've ever been, is inside my own head. And I'm proud of where I've come from in them sort of terms, to now see the light, to now be the strongest mentally I've ever been. To go through that, I think it gives me an edge on my opponents. It gives me an edge on people in general, because I've seen the darkest, and now I can appreciate the light so much more. So 2 months before Rio, I wasn't feeling great, but I managed to get myself together, played in the Paralympics, and I lost in the last 16, unfortunately, but I gave a good account of myself. And I enjoyed the experience as much as I could, and got everything out of it, and it was all I ever dreamed about. So yeah, for me, it just shows my toughness between going to the Paralympics and doing it was incredible for me.
When we do the show, we do the podcast, we always pick out a quote. Mm. And I think the scariest place I've ever been inside is my own head, and I was born in it. Might well be the quote of the week from Jack Hunter-Spivey with us on Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk. I think, if someone was to hear your story, they'd kind of go, oh, yeah, well, that must be something to do with the cerebral palsy. Mm. Or that yeah. must, he must feel a bit down about himself because he's in a wheelchair. He must feel a little bit sorry for himself, and that's where it would come from. When you've had those therapy sessions in the various forms and you've sat down with those different individuals, you mentioned that, and I'm sure we'll talk about some of the experiences that you've had in life. Has the disability been a factor? Is that something you've talked through in regard to how maybe you perceive yourself, your abilities, your inabilities, whatever you class it as? Is that something where there's been a crossover?
For me, not particularly. Ever since I was a kid, I've always thought myself as able-bodied. It doesn't really get me down. Even when I'm in my dark places, it doesn't really cross my mind too much. I think it crosses my mind the way other people perceive me as in a wheelchair, but I don't ever get down for being disabled. So I don't necessarily see myself as anything different.
That's a really important point to make, isn't it? Because we talk about mental health and everybody's got mental health. And we're not saying, oh, it's related to this, that, or the other. We're saying, well, actually, no. Well, this is my circumstance.
Yeah, exactly.
In a wheelchair, different person's circumstances. Yeah. And the issues might be exactly the same or of a certain sort of branch of the same thing.
Yeah, I think for me personally, I was born like it. I don't know what it's like to walk properly. And I think that actually does help. I think if you've been through accidents, I know a lot of people that have been through accidents and become in wheelchairs, that must be so hard to deal with, being able-bodied, knowing what it's like, and then going into a wheelchair. I mean, being in a wheelchair is probably hard for everybody, but for me, I don't know any difference. I don't know what it's like to be able-bodied. And now I think it's my unique selling point. I would not change it for the world. If someone said to me, here's a tablet, become able-bodied, I don't think I'd do it because it's part of me. That's who I am, and I'm really proud of being disabled and doing what I'm doing now.
In terms of your achievements, we talked about sort of where you're at the moment. Mm-hmm. In terms of those warm-up events and the Paralympic events that you were involved in, did you find that your mental health had an impact on your ability to either perform in them, but also to appreciate the involvement in them? You know, you're looking forward to Rio, but actually 2 weeks out, your mind's not in a place to be able to kick back and go, wow, Team GB's here. Has that been something that you balance? You appear to be in a sort of a happier place now in terms of looking forward. Have you found that actually, although you've had achievements, have they been tempered by mental health issues or the way you perceived them?
Yeah. For me, I'm really mentally strong in terms of I see my table tennis is like I'm an actor. Like, so I'm a big wrestling fan, like WWE wrestling, and I really appreciate the way then people can go from normal everyday people to the wrestlers they are, the characters they play. And when I'm feeling down, when I go to tournaments, that is my stage. That is me in the ring. That is me on TV. That is I can leave my sort of mental health and everything back home outside the court. And when I'm on the court, I'm JHS. I'm the guy playing table tennis. And I think I'm very good at sort of like getting the difference between the two. And I think that's the way I've dealt with it is, no matter what's going on outside the court, I'm going to be that really confident lad you see. I'm going to want to be controlling the game. I'm going to want to shout as loud as I can and being that guy who everyone watches play table tennis, because that is my stage. That is my release for my mental health. That is me out there 10 to 11, if you get what I mean. And that's the way I sort of deal with it. And it doesn't really have any impact on it. I think that's why I've been so successful and had mental health problems, because I've managed to split them up so well and be who I am on the court. So
I smell what you're cooking. Phrase.
Yeah.
I think you're younger than me, so.
Or The Rock and all that.
I was going to do a whole card on
that. Mental Health Monday.
On Radio City Talk.
With Mick Coyle.
Tackling the stigma.
Radio City Talk.
We got Jack Hunter-Spivey with us in the studio on Mental Health Monday. He's a Paralympian professional table tennis player as well, who's been sharing his mental health story. It's an incredible story, and it's a story which is continuing as well, because Jack is still a table tennis player. He's got high hopes as well for the future and what that can bring. Ranked 7 in the world at the moment, and undefeated since 2013,
It's not bad, is it? I lost one match 2013. Apart from that, was 2012 since I lost the last match, so...
Rock and roll.
It's not
Rock
too bad.
Jack's absolutely doing the business for us on the programme today. Jack, you mentioned when you were talking through the issues that you've gone through in your life, and people will see a wheelchair and they might go, well, that's what it's related to. Yeah. We've tackled that and we've said that that's not the issue. Mental health has been an issue within family life as well, something you've been really sort of keen to sort of deal with and talk about as well. And you've spoken about your mum as well in the past.
Yeah, my mum has mental health issues. She was diagnosed with bipolar and borderline personality, as far as I know. And she won't mind me talking about her story, but when growing up, there was things that when we were younger that I didn't necessarily attribute to mental health from my mum's side until you sort of get older and realise it yourself. I remember times when I was younger where I've gone into my mum's bedroom and she's been crying her eyes out, and I go, "Mum, are you okay?" And she's like, "Yeah, I've just been watching a sad film, don't worry about it." Or, for instance, I've been through different periods where my mum took the wrong tablets one time, and I saved her life when I was about six, tried to wake her up and call the ambulance. And just growing up around mental health, and my mum got sectioned when I was younger. I was going on holiday with my dad at the time. My mum and dad split up, and later on, years down the line, mum told me it was actually because she got sectioned and got help, and because she was taking such good care of me and my brother, they let her keep me and my brother, and she's at home and she's better now. So yeah, going through stuff with my mum, I think you realise your little traits or little things that are happening. And for me, my mum is my great strength of how she's come through it, and she's still on the other side, and my mum's still battling as it is. She's in a much better place now. She's actually moved down to Chichester. She started a new life down there with my little sister. And yeah, everything's looking up. But I think growing up around mental health, was a big thing in my life at the time.
I think it's amazing, isn't it, when you're growing up where, I mean, there are ages, and to be honest, this is probably continues way beyond your 15, 16, 17 years of age, where you have a feeling that your mum and dad are kind of invincible.
Yeah.
That they've got this sort of, they know everything, although they'll try and tell you everything. You know you can rely on them at 100%, but even those moments where there was a chink in the armour and there was an attempt to cover it up, there was maybe a sense that passed on to you. That you were aware that something wasn't quite right.
Yeah, I think when you get to the age of like maybe 10 or 11 and you see things like this, or for instance, my mum's bipolar, when she has the manic phases where she goes out and she's trying to buy a wardrobe but she couldn't decide which one, so she's bought five wardrobes, or she's done things like, you think that's not normal behaviour. It's not a normal thing that someone's parents would do. But it's just recognising that, and she was always very open about telling us about her issues. And yeah, it's just dealing with that, recognising that, and supporting her through both times. And I think it's been hard. We've had a lot of ups and downs. But yeah, ultimately, my signs of strength. And my mum was the only one when I was younger. I found table tennis at the age of 10. And nobody back then was professional. No one was a professional athlete. And I came back from the youth club. I started playing table tennis, and I said, "Mum, I'm going to be a professional athlete. I'm going to be a professional table tennis player." And she was the only one to believe me at the time. And the dream was to always to be a Paralympian, was to always to go to the Paralympics. And I remember qualifying for Rio. You have to be the top 10 in the world. And at the time, I was probably ranked 12. I had to go around all the tournaments, and it accumulated in me going to the China Open at the end of the year. And basically, I had to not lose a match to qualify to go. And at the time, I was really struggling with mental health-wise. I was really struggling with the pressure of qualifying, because I dropped down the ranking list. The coach just said, "Look, we fund you to qualify. If you don't qualify, you're not going to be in the squad anymore." So for me, that was no house. There was no job. The dream was over. And to go to one tournament and try and prove yourself and qualify in that way was difficult. I remember in China, getting through the stages, getting to I think it was the semi-finals, and I played a Chinese guy. And in table tennis, we play best of five sets up to 11 points. And if it's 11 points, you play two clear points. So at the time, I was 2-1 down in sets and 10-9 down in points. So if I would have lost one more point, that was Rio over. That was my dream done. I managed to win the point. I managed to win the game, and I'd qualify for Rio. And I remember the phone call in China, ringing my mum and saying, "Mum, I've made it. I'm going to go to the Paralympics." And we were both crying. It was just one of the moments that we've shared together. We shared that sort of dream together of going there. And yeah, we were on the phone for a good 20 minutes. Then we realised how much it cost me in China. Then we put the phone down. But yeah, it was a special moment that always stay with me, of ringing my mum and telling her that no matter what we've been through in our lives, I've made it and I'm still going through it.
I mean, if I was pitching a movie and I said, "It's about this guy, dealt a seemingly bad hand at birth, but actually comes through, then battles, you know, mental health, as well as, you know, his physical health, becomes supreme, you know, in terms of his physical stature, but it's an all or nothing. He must go and he must win."
Yeah.
And he gets to the point where he's at the lowest possible point that, you know, the dream is on the precipice of dying, and he brings it back and he wins it round. Yeah. There's a film there. I don't know. Can we just by telling the story, Lizzie, do we get the rights to that film? I think we do, maybe. Yeah. We should copyright that.
Tales in this Rocky.
Yeah, it's the Karate Kid giving a brilliant 80s soundtrack. Mm. It's an amazing story. But I wondered, from your mum's point of view, when obviously she was aware of, you know, physically how you'd been growing up, but obviously you've been able to do something which physically most people couldn't ever think of doing. You conquered that. When you then had that conversation with her about your mental health, how did she react to that one? Because presumably to your mum, who was aware of her own issues, she'd have thought, "Wow, Jack's done this off his own back.
Yeah.
you know, physically brilliant, and then for the mental health thing to creep back in, was that something that, that was it upsetting for her?
Yeah, it was a strange one, because when we were growing up, we literally had nothing. The reason why I went to the youth club was because it was for disadvantaged kids, so to speak. We used to go there, get an evening meal. There's other sports there, there's a disabled club. I found table tennis, and at the age of 11, I got asked to go to my GB trial in Sheffield. Mum literally couldn't afford the train tickets. We tried our best, and we managed to get down to Sheffield and get my trial, and I got into the GB development team. And since then, training at Halton, it was £2.50 a week to go. And some weeks my mum literally couldn't afford it. She would be sacrificing loaves of bread to send me. We were literally that sort of skint. For instance, like Providence and all them sort of money lending things, and a door would knock, we'd turn the lights off, get behind the couch. And it was that sort of upbringing. At the age of 13, 14, I was going up and down trains on my own to Sheffield. I was sleeping on hotel lobbies, just trying to get a bit of training in Sheffield, because the dream was to do that. And I think my mum always seen me as a strong individual, as I can face anything, I can do this and can do that. And I think when I told her that about mental health problems, it was only when I got really diagnosed, I think she really understood it, but I think she also felt really bad that she'd given it to me. I remember having a conversation, she thought it was genetic, she thought it was the way I was upbringing, and it wasn't, it was the way I was. It was nothing to do with sort of my mum. And don't get me wrong, there is factors in and out, but I'm never going to attribute that to mum. It's nothing to do with that sort of side. But at the time, I think my mum took it quite hard, but I think now she's seen the way I've dealt with it. I think she's really sort of strengthened. I think me and mum help each other. I think when mum's down, she messages me. When I'm down, I message my mum. And I think it's there, so to have that support network of talking to each other and going through it together is definitely helpful.
It seems from what you've been saying, the last 18 months or so, you've been in a much better place in terms of where, what are those signs now you keep an eye out for? You mentioned that you got the new girlfriend on the scene. I think you were hinting that she's kind of redecorated the place a little bit.
Literally, I was away for 2 weeks in Slovenia, Slovakia, and we've got a flat, and we were talking about decorating colours, and when I got back, I had a week off and was like, I'll go and have to decorate and get on the week back. I'd come back and she'd decorate the whole flat for me. She'd moved in all the furniture that we got, and she works 15-hour shifts. She's a support worker. And she was going at 5 a.m. to paint for 2 hours, going to work, coming back at 10 o'clock at night, and then painting again whilst I was away for a surprise for my birthday. And I got back and the flat was redecorated. We'd had all the furniture that we'd picked out. It was incredible, and I can't thank her enough. No, she's listening now. So, Lucy, thank you very much for what you did. And I think it's incredible the support I've got from her now.
She is what we call a keeper.
Yeah, and I'm punching as well, so it's not too bad.
But on that as well, in terms of those, what are those signs now that you look out for to think, oh, hang on, I can spot something now? Do you find you've got that ability?
Yeah, I sat down with my psychologist, Tim Pitt, and he's been incredible. He's a sports psychologist by profession, but he's helped me so much through my clinical psychology. I have a sheet now at the moment, it's on my fridge, and it gives me signs of when feel like I'm slipping a little bit, when it's getting further and further down, and then signs. So for me, little signs would be struggling to get up in the morning but still getting up, or I have eczema, so not putting my creams, or probably my skin getting worse, or not showering every day, skipping that, or thinking I don't need to do that. And they're my little triggers of going, you know what, you need to do that in order to not slip down to where you were. And it gives me, it's like a little sheet, like a little flow chart, really. And it has different things. It says, if this happens, speak to someone. If you feel this way, speak to my coaches, or try and reach out to someone, or there is help there. And the bottom one is like feeling suicidal, and it has the rethink number on. It has a number I can ring, the Samaritan's number. It has things I've got to go to at last resort. And I'm touch wood, I've never been down to that bottom bit now as I've had that. And now I can see the scale of how it goes down. And it's okay to not be 100% all the time. It's okay not to be okay. It's okay to be 50%, but recognising that and still functioning in a way to get yourself back to 100%. And that's the way I deal with it, really.
Do you find it easy to be honest with that chart? Or do you try and... Do you almost try and... Can you kid it? Can you go, well, actually, I am going to have a shower today, but actually that's... You know, I'm going to do it to spite the chart. You know what I mean? Do you find that it works? Or is honesty still key with yourself?
Yeah, you've got to be very honest with myself. It helps live with my girlfriend now, where she'd be like, get in the shower, will you? Or you're not the number. Have you took your tablet today? She's always on at me, taking my medication, taking my tablet, because she knows how important it is. I could go a few days without taking my tablet and feel okay, but then 4 days later, I'm not in a good place. And she recognises that. She recognises the knock-on effect, and she's very good at knowing what to do when I'm feeling down. And she helps me recognise the steps as well. And it's having that sort of open relationship, having that sort of open chat with people, And my coaches at training could pull me aside some days and say, are you okay? And I'll be like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm just a bit tired sometimes, or I'm feeling like this. And I think you've got to have that open communication with people around you that understand it. And I think for me, that has been a godsend.
Yeah. Of course, that question comes up all the time on the programme where people go, are you okay? And you kind of do that. And everyone has that, yeah, fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Or is that she's not well?
Yeah, exactly.
And I think,
yeah.
But because you've got the sports science team behind you, sports psychology team, it's easier to give a proper response there, which is, you know, which might be more honest.
I think you've still got to be open with people. I think I could still go to Tim and say, yeah, I'm fine. I probably could mask it quite well to look like him, but I'm only kidding myself. I'm only kidding myself at the time. I can go further down, and there's going to be a point where I can't put that face on anymore. And for me, it's being honest with myself, like you said, and recognising that I'm not feeling great and getting myself to a situation where I can feel a lot better. And because if you say, I'm fine, and you're not, then what are you gaining from that? What are you gaining from hiding it away? And I think mental health is talked about a lot more now. Things like this is incredible to talk about. And we should talk about it openly. A lot of things I say in my speeches and when I travel around is that I was born with cerebral palsy. I'm quite happy to talk about my story of being blind and deaf, where everyone's quite happy to talk about adversity, but we never talk about mental health. I was born with cerebral palsy. I was born with mental health problems. Why can't we talk about the same? If I've hurt my arm, I go to the hospital. If my head's not feeling great, I go and seek help. And it's that sort of stigma we need to get rid of. It's that sort of talking openly about it as I'm not feeling okay, because your brain is part of your body as well. And that is the biggest part of health that I can think of.
Jack, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate you coming on the programme.
Thank you.
For people who are watching via the YouTube channel, Radio City Talk, they'll see you got your lottery funded.
Yeah, this is my GB kit. Yeah, well, so
you're branded to the max. Who are your supporters at the moment?
Yeah, so at the moment I've got UK Sport, which is lottery funded, which I'm really thankful for. I've got a new sponsor called Code, which is a nightclub in Sheffield. So if anyone in Sheffield, go down to Code on this Friday and Saturday night. It's honestly the best nightclub in Sheffield. I've got TSP, which is my new clothing sponsor. I've got a lot of supporters. I'm also looking for sponsors as well, because obviously I'm a professional athlete. It's very difficult to make a living. At the moment, I'm trying to find someone that helped me get a day wheelchair, because the wheelchair I'm sitting at the moment is not great for me at all. It's actually cutting the nerves off in my back. So I'm losing feeling in my legs. My back is constantly in pain. But the wheelchairs are like $6,000-$7,000 sometimes. So for me to try and find money for that is very difficult. I live on a budget of $12,000 a year. So to try and get all the money bills together, I live off a very tight budget. So yeah, I'm always looking for sponsors to go on the back of my kit, to travel around, to do speeches, to put on my social media. So I'm very out there. So if anyone would like to contact me for sponsorship, I'm JackHSTT, all one word, on Twitter. Same on Instagram. And my email address is jackhs.tt@hotmail.com.
And we'll get all the links up on our social media as well, so people can follow that. Jack, thank you for your time. Great to see you. We'll see you again very soon, I'm sure. Best of luck with everything going on in the world of table
tennis.
Thank you. We'll speak to you ahead of Tokyo?
Yeah, I'll
Brilliant.
Be back.
Look forward to it. Jack Hunter-Spivey, our guest today on Mental Health Monday. If people want to find out more information about the show, they can head to the website, radiocitytalk.co.uk. There's a link to Jack on our social media. We are at Radio City Talk. And if you're looking to find mental health resources close to where you live, head to the Hub of Hope, hubofhope.co.uk. Type in your postcode or hit your location on the app and the website, and that'll point to mental health services in and around where you live. It's Mental Health Monday from Radio City Talk.
Mental Health Monday
on Radio City Talk
with Mick Coyle,
tackling the stigma.
Radio City Talk.